your keys and you touch the passenger door, if I've got the key, there's a sensor in the little key fob that you have. And if you open the passenger door, it unlocks all the doors. But if I go to my side and I do that, it just opens up the one door. And I would rather have my driver's side door open up all the doors. And I can switch that, but I just have not taken the time to go figure this thing out. Number one, it's got over 400 pages in it. So there's a tremendous amount of information in here. It says Toyota 2007 Owner's Manual, and it says, for your safety and comfort, read carefully and keep it in the vehicle. And there have been times when I've had to access this, because with all the electronics that they have, if the electronics fails, you are sunk. There's not much you can do, but there's a way to, I guess, reprogram it. I think out in the parking lot here one time, I couldn't start the car, and I can't remember even then what the problem was. But you're trying to, you know, hunker down and kind of figure out what it is, or you can put the key fob up to where you push the button to start the car, and that does something to reprogram. Again, I'd have to look at the manual. You know, I've looked at some of these things, but I know certain factors I've learned over the years on what to do with a car. And not just that, but I remember I also had, I don't know if you realize, within what's called two-stroke or two-cycle engines, I had a motorcycle one time, it was called a two-stroke. And you didn't have crankcase oil, you didn't have regular oil. What you did is you had an oil mix, and it was an automatic oil mix, so I had to keep that little tank filled with that oil mix. It mixes with the gas, and it does something to where it lubricates your cylinders or your valves in that manner. Whereas regular cars, you know, you've got to go through oil changes, and then, you know, you've got all degrees of the different types of oil. You know, most cars now take what's called 5W30. Now, if you took a straight 30 weight, which some will use probably more down south, because it stays that weight all the time. It stays that heavy 30 weight, or the others will change the viscosity or the thinness or thickness of the oil depending on what temperature it is. But if you would use that 30 weight up north in the cold weather, your engine would have a harder time because it stays really thick. So you want to make sure that you use the right oil. Now, one time there was one that I knew very closely, and I learned a big lesson out of this, that thought that he could take regular 30 weight oil and mix it with the gas. And I told him, you can't do that. And he thought, well, it's just oil. Isn't all oil just oil? No, I just told you, it's not. There's a kind that mixes with gas. So I knew the answer. But in order to prove it, I called the dealer, and he said, he confirmed what I know. I go, would you talk to this person, let him know that? And he talked to him and found out that certainly you can't use 30 weight oil. So I was even thinking, in light of eye drops, I do have one small problem I have with my eye is some have this problem, especially when you get older, the tear ducts start to clog up a little bit. So I thought, hey, why not use some turpentine drops? Did you ever think of that before? Because I said, if anything, you won't have cataracts. You know, the rest of your eye might be burned out. Now, that wouldn't be a good idea, would it? But sometimes people try different things, don't they, that you find out just don't work? And when you try that certain things in a car, if you try to use kerosene to fill up your engine, it may work for a little while. But it probably wouldn't be a good idea to put kerosene in your gas tank. You know, there are certain engines, for instance, truck engines are meant to have diesel fuel. Try putting that in your car, and you're going to get really clogged up very quick. So there's instructions books, there's manuals. It says for your safety and comfort. So if you really want your car to handle properly, then you want to make sure that you follow the instructions to make your car last for a long time. And it'll work, and you'll be happy. And that's great. We just got one fact for my son, Zachary. He flew down. I was actually going to fly up to Minnesota, and my wife said, why don't you let him just fly down, and he can drive the car up? So we did that. So we were looking around the car lot last week and making it a surprise for him. So we went to this one dealer, about two or three dealers, actually, so I could kind of throw him off. We had already bought the car. So the third car dealer I went to, I go, Zach, we need to find something that's got your name on it. And so everything was closed. I believe it was July 4th. It must have been July 4th because the dealers were closed. So my wife had driven the car over to an Ingalls parking lot. And so we were going over there to meet my wife, and we were walking through the parking lot, and my son saw something that we had talked about. He goes, isn't that the car that we talked about? And on the front, we had on the front license plate, I had a piece of paper that had his name on it. But the thing is, you had to pull it. I said, let's look at that. What does that say? And I pulled the paper down, and it had his name on it. Because I told him, I go, we got to find something with your name on it that had his name on it. So, but I noticed that it didn't have an owner's manual. So we're going to have to either get him an owner's manual, but I told him about things that he's going to have to do and have to keep up. I remember a long, long time ago when we had pulled a trailer, I think, from Michigan. We were going to the Smoky Mountains, and the car overheated. And I remember my dad opened up the hood, and he opened up that radiator cap, and you know what happened. You know, I think most of you know now, don't you? You either learned that from somebody or you got burned yourself. But I remember when he opened that up, all this black stuff, it was dirty and it was muddy. I still remember vividly, my dad didn't know how to take care of a car engine. And now we keep our fuel, you know, our mixtures clean. You know, you get your fluid changed from time to time. Otherwise, you find out you're going to have breakdowns. So you're going, okay, why is he taking all this time to spend on this? Well, I think you know where I'm going to. You know, this I would call this, it's an owner's manual, but you might call it the will of Toyota. This is the will of Toyota. This is what they will you to do, what they want you to do in order to keep your car operating safely. They go, why would you give a manual? Because don't they want you to break down so you buy another one? No, that happens normally. Even after keeping this, they just wear down. That's the way that they get. But what about this one? This one, that was 2007. This was right around 4000 BC. When the word started to come out. So you could call this one the will of the Father. This is what we've been talking about for the past couple weeks. I wonder if you've really reflected on this pertaining to your my life. Do you get up every morning now? Do you ask the question, what is God's will for me today? And I think that's really where we have to go through with this. When you look at all the scriptures that pertain to this, I'll give you a little quiz today. If you can fill this in, these are pretty easy ones. I have come to do blank blank of him who sent me. Now, that's an easy one. Come on. You ought to all get that. So this is Christ speaking himself. He came to do the will of the Father who sent him, not his own thing. This is something for us to think about today as we go through our lives. Because really, if you're going for an example, if you're trying to find an example of success in life, who is the one that we're really looking to? It's Jesus Christ. That's the prime example of who we're looking to. So this is what he said himself. Now, he also prayed the prayer in Matthew 6:10. He said, thy kingdom come, or your kingdom come, I like to say, because that's Shakespearean words. Your kingdom come, blank, 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 blank. Your will be done. Now, most everyone knows that prayer in professing Christianity today. Most know that prayer, but do they understand that prayer? And my question is, do we understand that prayer? Why did he say, your will be done, when it's going to be done anyway? He knew it. Why did he say that? Why did he say, your will be done? Now, obviously, one good answer for it could be that he was setting an example prayer, wasn't he? He says, when you pray, this is how you pray. And I've mentioned that before. A lot of people think, in fact, recently there was another church article that was brought to my attention saying that it's okay to pray to Jesus. I say, I don't even go with that issue. I follow the instruction book. This is what Christ said to do. I don't care what your reasoning is. They'll look to see, well, Stephen, because much of the article was based around Acts, where Stephen looked up, what did he see? Do you remember what Stephen saw? He saw Jesus Christ. He didn't see the Father, did he? It says, I saw Christ standing at the right hand. But he says he saw Christ. So who did he call out to? He called out to who he saw. Was that a prayer? No, it wasn't. He was calling out to the one he saw. And that's the only proof you've got. And so they kind of argued around that point and then went back to most of the article going, yeah, it's probably a pretty good idea to pray to the Father. I would say that's Christ's example. It's a really good idea to pray to the Father. And you're not leaving out Christ, by the way, because we do it in his name, don't we? But we understand this is the will of the Father. This is what Christ said the will of the Father is. I would rather follow that than someone else's ideas. So these are sometimes the things that we have to think about. Why did he say, your will be done, when he knew it was going to be done? What did that show? That showed Jesus Christ as being totally yielding and submissive to his Father. That's what he was saying in those words. Your will be done, not mine, yours. So that's the example that should be for us today too. When we think of this prayer, your will be done. God, help me, show me what it is. Because I know if I do my will, it probably won't work out. It'll like be putting diesel in a regular gas engine. It just doesn't work out. And we've got a whole lifetime, don't we, to experience this. Until we finally come in total submission to yielding to the will of the Father. This is a learning process, and we're all learning this. This is what we're going through. We have great stories, don't we, about what's happened in the church. When you look at the examples that were given about the Pharisees today, didn't we have that too and still do sometimes today? We've written our own Talmud sometimes. Instead of following this, we've added to it. Some of you remember we are measuring skirt lengths. Now, does that do away with modesty? It doesn't at all. But we don't get so Talmudic and judgmental. We still teach modesty. We still believe that. We still would teach, dress your best. You're coming before God the Father. But instead of dictating my will, I would rather have God show them what his will is and have them yield to the will of the Father, not to the will of Eric. So this is what we learn, and we strive to do these things. It's so easy to fall into that trap. We still fall into those issues today. But it just became commonplace with the Pharisees to do things like that. So I hope that prayer now has a little bit more meaning to us than it did before, because we try to understand, why did he say this? Why did he say, your kingdom come, when he knew it was going to come? Because that was, again, a reference to the fact that God's kingdom is coming. And he was yielding to that fact. He was a part of it, and so are we. And so it should make us reflect on what we're doing and why we're here and our purpose. We've got such a special purpose. That's why it's so enjoyable teaching these kids. Because we're right at the brink of 5 years old that you're starting to sow seeds for the future. And I don't want to sow my will seeds, my ideas. I want to do that with God's. And we're out today, full force, brunt force, seeing all the baloney and the garbage that's out here today. What was the big thing this week? Most people know it was big in the news this week, besides the Kardashians. It was the Zimmerman case, wasn't it? And I look at that case and I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. Is there like just a blindness over the entirety of the world? Yes, there is. I think once you yield to sin and not following the will of the Father, God goes, okay, and he lets it just come down and you can't make sense and it's getting worse. Because the will of the Father is not being followed at all. The scripture that says, not everyone that says, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of God, but he who does the will of the Father. You know, so that should behoove us to kind of look at this topic here. It's incredibly important. Christ said himself in John 5, verse 30, he said, I do not seek blank, 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 my own will. And so there's your example. Sometimes we just let it fly and we don't think about it because everything's going so fast. Our days go so fast. But I tell you what, I'll bet they'll have a lot more substance if you get up in the morning and you ask the Father what his will is for you that day. It'll take on a lot more importance. And the piddly things won't have as much meaning, because every day we're going to have to go through those piddly things. Every day I've got some kind of paperwork to do. But there's a lot much more meaning to life when you ask what the will of the Father is. You're totally thinking about submission to the Father, yielding to him, and it gives us great purpose to our calling. Now let's turn to 1 John chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2. I've not yet turned to this one, and this is something that the Apostle John wrote. Obviously, if it's 1 John 2, we don't go here very often, but it's an incredible, important book. 1 John chapter 2, and let's look over here at verse 17. He says here, "And the world is passing away, and the lust of it." Isn't that the case? What kind of meaning does that have us for? You know, it's really getting worse, isn't it? Can you think of any kind of turnaround that we may be able to have? Is there going to be some new leadership that comes in? You know, we've got a few more years till we get maybe some new senators and congressmen. Are things going to change then? When we come up for a new presidency, do we have any thought of maybe a new president coming in and changing things? Is the Supreme Court going to get any better? Are they going to put new, better judges on there that have better judgment? Is that going to happen? Is our environment going to get any better? Are we going to stop poisoning things? Is our food going to get any better? Are they going to do away with Monsanto? Are they going to stop giving drugs that hurt people? Is the education process going to get any better? Is the family structure going to get any better? Are families going to get stronger, more oriented toward God, and teach children that are God-fearing children? Is that going to get any better? Are the court cases going to get more simple and easy to understand? Are there going to be less of those? Are the news networks going to get any better? Are there going to be writers and journalists that are going to be more righteous and follow God's ways? All the answers you know to those. So when you read this, it says the world is passing away. It's making its progress, and it's coming to its completion, to where Christ is going to return. And we see it every day as we watch this, and it frustrates a lot of us. But even Christ himself said, don't be frustrated, don't be afraid, don't be sad, this has got to happen. And this is where we remind ourselves every day when we ask the Father, what's your will, that our life makes a huge difference and what we do every day, despite what's done in this world. This is what John said at his time. And it wasn't really as bad, probably, as it is now in our time. He says, but he who does the will of God abides forever. There you go again. It would behoove us once again to figure out, to read the manual. The entirety of it. Every bit of this book is important. It's important for us to read this manual. Let's go back to Romans chapter 12, because the last time I was here, we went through quite a few points. I think I told you 44, but somehow I had my notes marked wrong. So I wonder how many really have taken a look at this, though. You know, it'd be nice, really. This would be a nice little short study for you if you would like to do this. Go down Romans 12 and write down all the things that are said, because you can talk about the will of the Father, and it's a huge, broad subject. You can talk about the owner's manual, or the manual, but in it are a lot of details. Every detail about how to roll your window down, what kind of oil to use, what tire pressures. In here, it's here. Everything needed to live a happy life is right in this manual. And now we've got some examples just here in the 12th chapter. I won't go through all these, but look how it starts. I beseech you therefore, brethren, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. That's probably a whole sermon in itself. Which is your reasonable service. It's basic. That's the basics. Then it goes, and don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. How do you renew your mind? You got all the news and all the education of this world. Then we got to go back to the Bible and see if it jibes with it, if it matches up. That you may prove what is good and acceptable and the perfect, what? Will of God. And then he gives examples all the way through. Sometimes there are sub-examples. In verse 10 he says, be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love. And then there's subsections. In honor, giving preference to one another. Another subsection, not lagging in diligence. Another subsection, fervent in spirit. Another one, serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, and all those are the manual. So if something's not working in our life, we got to go back to the manual and check these things out and see if we're keeping our oil, is your oil pressure filled? Are you keeping your oil up? Are you keeping your fluids okay? Because if you won't, it says here, for your safety and comfort, you're not going to be safe and you won't be comfortable. Not when you're out on I-75 and you just blew your engine. And not when we have things that happen to us in our life. This is a chapter filled with the will of God. What are we doing with it? 4000 BC, Owner's Manual. So I'd like to pick it up here a little bit from where we've left off, having based it on just the beginning of what we had talked about and gone through, and all these different points that simply you just see in Romans chapter 12, all those examples of God's will. Now let's go over to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. This is what we have even in the church today. And what I appreciate, what's been gone over even recently, number one, I love the zeal of the men that have pushed forward to preach a gospel, to get web pages up, and all the help that they've reached out and received from younger people. Our Life, Hope, and Truth site was done by members in the church. I think, what is it called? Perfect North? They've got a company. I don't know if it's called Perfect North or something of that nature that helped design our website. But it's a compilation of people that have helped to do this. There's no way I could do this camp, especially without these counselors that are coming in and the staff that's coming in. Oh, I do all the paperwork, but once I get there, I'm overseeing it, making sure everything is going well, helping out where I can, but they're really doing the work. They're the ones that have got to lead these kids for 24 hours for 3 days. And it's important that I have counselors that know what they're doing, that know how to deal with these kids. And they're all different because they've dealt with theirs, but now they've got somebody else's. Somebody that might not be sleeping through the night. Somebody that might be getting up at 3 in the morning and saying, I've got to go to the bathroom. And they've got to be the ones to take them. Couldn't do it without that. This is what 1 Corinthians is talking about. We come here today, and I don't ever want to take this for granted, but somebody does the tables, and somebody brings the food, and somebody does the sound. All these things that are put together, even within small churches, that things are done. And sometimes we just come, which I would be grateful to do, just come and enjoy. But over the years in the church, we've all done different responsibilities and we've all given in certain ways. You know, the time comes where you don't do some of that, so much of that before. You know, I'm doing what my father-in-law did years ago. Almost 50, it'll be 50 years he served in the work. But he's not doing, even though he still does some circuits, he's not pastoring churches per se, but he still helps out. So I called it when they so-called called him retired. I remember one of those semis passing me. And you know, they've got now what they call those retreads on there. I go, retired, retired. It takes on a whole new meaning. You just put a new tread back on and you keep going. You know, and some will continue to serve, but they'll do it in different ways. And I always thought, look, if this was perfect in the church, this is the will of Eric. As I saw the perfect way, I thought that it would work out well in the church. You get your pastors out in the field and you grind it out for 6 years. Then you come in for a seventh year for what, and we did sabbaticals for a while, but it just didn't carry on. But I thought, what a great idea. You get the pastor in to go on a refresher. He has no responsibilities. If you want to go to Jerusalem and go on a dig, if you want to take these classes and do a refresher that way, and just rest that seventh year, and then go back out and dig for 6 years. Wouldn't that be great? We don't have the manpower for that now. You know, we talked about retirement, and I'm thinking about the retreads. I go, retire at 60? That's 4 years for me. I don't think that's going to happen. I just don't think it's going to happen. So you just serve, and we've had many that are older in age that continue to serve in different ways, but they're not plugging the road like they did before. They're sure not hitting it in that way. But this is what it talks about here. And God has given us all different gifts. And maybe it's not being totally used like it will in the future now, but we're still learning and we're still being instructed. because we've got those prime examples of offices and responsibilities that we will have in the future. Here in verse 4, it says there are diversities or differences. It's the same word as used actually in verse 5, differences. There are diversities or differences of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are differences of administration or of service, but the same Lord. See, now we've got what they call corporations. That's turned a lot of people off. You've probably heard it too, haven't you? You know, I'll never be with organized religion. And so the natural response for us is, so you enjoy disorganized religion. You know, that's normal response. They obviously don't mean it that way, but since they've seen what they feel to be abuses of power or whatever, they don't want to deal with that anymore. So we've got a whole scattered bunch kind of with that mentality. And so, yes, and so I bring up the example, as you've heard me before, how many fathers here have messed up, made bad decisions within your family? We all raise the hand. Okay, no more fathers. We're not doing fathers anymore. And the kids are going, yeah, right, until they realize the father is there to help them, to love them, to give them instruction, to teach them. But yeah, we've all messed up. But yeah, there are different ways of when you sit down and talk, there are absolutely different ways of doing it. Can you tell me a better way? Can you tell me a better way of preaching the gospel? You want to try it on your own? You want to do your own TV program? Hey, we've got some stations around here even. Go for it. How are you going to get the funds? You going to pay for it yourself? Now, how is this all going to be done? Is that your gift? Is that the will of God? Or are you being presumptuous? So we have a caution right now, even within, as we know, we need more ministers, but I've already heard been said more than one time, you don't want to put someone in that God doesn't want to be there. And probably in the past, you've probably seen ministers that probably shouldn't have been there. Or deacons that probably shouldn't have been there. You saw that old buddy system at work. Somebody knew somebody, the favor is being done. Human nature has been out there, even in the church. So we're looking at what the will of God is here, not what our will is. There are differences of operations. Wow, so there is more than one way to skin the cat. Proverbial, as we say. I don't know if I like that statement, but anyway, that's just something that's come up, words. But there are different ways to do things, aren't there? One way is just not the only way. But it's the same God who works in all. But the manifestation or the evidence, here's an important word here, the evidence in verse 7 of the Spirit is given to every man to profit, not himself though. The evidence of the Spirit is given to everyone to profit. For to one is given by the Spirit the word of wisdom, to another the word of knowledge by the same Spirit, to another faith. There are those that you've seen that have been ministers strong in faith, stronger than others. That was their gift. To another, gifts of healing by the same Spirit. To another, the working of miracles. So there were those that were out there. Paul was one of them. Remember, that's where the idea of the cloth got to. When you send in something and the minister is too far, we just follow that example that was there. That was a judgment that was made in the church. And you know, it can be done in many different ways. I've seen a whole different ways. Mr. Armstrong, by the way, I found, used to fast, and he'd anoint a bunch of cloths and then send them out to people. Is anything wrong with that? It was a judgment on how to do it. Do I have... Now, I normally, the way I've done it, is when you call and I'm too far, I'll go pray and anoint the cloth. That's the way I've done it. Is that the only way? No. In fact, I would respect someone that actually had fasted and asked for the power of God's Spirit to whomever that cloth came to would be healed, because it's by the faith of that individual anyway. So I've had people that have called me. I'm going, well, it's, you know, I can't get it out in the mail today. There's no post office going. They go, understood. I did my part. I called. That person was healed before the cloth got there. I've seen that done before. So when we see this, I'm giving you some examples of how things can be done in a different way. But we grow up sometimes and we've always done it this way, haven't we? You know, you've always had your eggs. That's the way I like my eggs. Don't change it. So if I'm going to have a fried egg, my wife and my mother-in-law even know this now. You can ask, how does he like his fried egg? It's got to be on toast. I don't like a fried egg by itself. It's hard for me to eat that. So especially that white part. I used to cut around and just eat the yolk because of that white part is, you know. And I already know my wife. Do not give her an undone egg that's still kind of got the gloppy white on it still. Ugh. But am I going to change that? That's not happening. But I have changed over the years as far as things that I've eaten. And by the way, I've been intrigued by people who will do things in a different way. Because I'm going, what's behind that? That's interesting. Instead of taking offense to it, I'll go, hey, maybe there is a better way. Maybe that does work a little bit better, but it kind of takes the pride out of you then. When you realize you've done it this way for so long, now you might need to change it up a little bit. See, there is prime examples of how we work together within the will of God. And that's fine. So to another prophecy, there have been those that are pretty good with that gift. Whether it could be inspired speaking, or it could be an interpretation of certain scriptures. The ones that I've respected the most are the ones that have not been so dogmatic. The ones that say, you know, it'd be great if we would lay out some scenarios. Just seems like we're afraid to sometimes because it's always got to be that way. And I'm kind of looking, better be careful with that because there are going to be big plates of crow in the future. And we've made those mistakes too, haven't we, in the church? And I don't look derogatory or bad. It's a process that we've gone through. We don't want that to happen. But hey, we've asked about that in the church. What about this? What about things that are going to happen in the future? And I've come to the determination, it doesn't matter what you know about that. If you're not fulfilling the will of the Father in the way that you live your life, it's irrelevant as to what's going to happen, how it's going to take place, where it's going to take place, all these things in the future, because they're going to happen. We just want to make sure we're there. So there are some that have a gift of that. To another, interpretation of language, of tongues. Now that's interesting. I didn't get that for a while until I took my 4 years of French, a semester of German, a fourth grade Spanish. I probably remember more Spanish from fourth grade than I do 4 years of French, just because of the way it was used. Or Chinese. I probably know more Chinese than French, because I studied it for 6 weeks at Beijing University and then went 2 weeks touring a country to where you would use the language. I remember sticking my head out of the train, looking at people as we're coming into the station and going, Jingho Cha, and they would just start cracking up. Because it means, would you like tea? Would you like some tea? But it was practicing. I'm practicing the accent mark, Jingho Cha, Jingho Cha. You know, would you like some tea? And they're all cracking up. It was really a fun sight to see. But you know, there are those, by the way, as you know, maybe you know some people that are just good at picking up languages. My oldest son is one of them. He's studied some Japanese. Now he's studying Russian. Russian? Russian? Really? I don't even know any of those words. Maybe vodka? I don't know. But you know, there are some, they can take a language and they can easily, something is factored within a gift that God's given to them. We've got Mr. Meeker, who's fluent in French. And so he's able to help with the production of things, and he's able to go over to a lot of French-speaking parts of the world and help out in that way. He's got that gift. So, I mean, we can see prime examples of this. But verse 11, it sums it up. But through all these, that one in the selfsame spirit, dividing to every man severally as he wills. As who wills? It's really here speaking of, when you're talking about Jesus Christ here, it's speaking of Christ as the head of the church. But he already said, I don't come to do the will of the Father. So he's just passing on what the will of the Father is to the church. See, if it's the will of men or of a man, it's going to come to nothing. It will not have the support of God and Jesus Christ. So that's why we've learned we've got to walk so carefully of not putting somebody in a position to where that's not their gift. It just won't work. Now let's go to Ephesians chapter 5. Here once again we see another example. There are all kinds of these examples, and you would think, remember, as we double up on scriptures where he talks about the same thing sometimes, that means it's very important to God. Ephesians 5, verse 15, this says here, "See then," Paul is speaking to the Ephesians, and he says in Ephesians 5, verse 15, "See then that you walk circumspectly." I don't like to walk over these words, so when you hear a word like circumspectly, what does that mean? So I looked it up. It comes from the Greek word akribos. It means diligently or perfectly or exactly. "See then you walk exactly the way that we're supposed to." Remember what God said about his law in Deuteronomy and in Revelation. Remember what he said? Don't add to it. That's what the Pharisees did, and actually they were also taking away from it. Don't add to it. Don't take away from it. I still always remember that about carrying half the weight. I think it was half the weight of a dried fig on the Sabbath. You couldn't carry. I got that from Mr. Leon Walker. You know, all of a sudden you couldn't carry half the weight of a dried fig. I go, I couldn't carry my Bible. We went over to Jerusalem. You couldn't use the elevator. Do you know why? That's kindling a fire. The spark. They went back. You shouldn't kindle a fire. We had to go revisit that. Does that mean you can't build a fire to stay warm? No, it had to do with work. It had to do with their work positions and doing their actual work on the Sabbath. So they took it. You can't. So I've got to walk up 12 flights of stairs instead of pushing a button and getting the elevator. And then, of course, I can't carry my suitcases or anything else because that's over half the weight of a dried fig. I don't know how I could wear this coat. But that's the stuff that they did. And then you think, well, they did that then. Then you bring it up to some of today's doing within the modern day churches. And some have gotten that, what we would call Pharisaical. So see then you walk exactly like the will of the Father. And it gives another one, redeeming the time or making the most of the time because the days are evil. And if they were evil in that time, they're certainly well exceeded that now. Verse 17, "Wherefore do not be ignorant, but understand what the will of the Lord is." So if we can either run over that statement or we can think about it on a daily basis, getting up first thing in the morning. If you want to put God first and all these other scriptures tie into it. One of my favorites, Matthew 6:33. "Seek you first the kingdom, and the rest of it will be added unto you." It ties right into that. Because if you get up in the morning, you think, God, what is your will for me today? And you can be excited about a new day because you've got God working and focusing in your life. It all ties in. It goes right to Proverbs 3. And blank your ways, acknowledge him. All of them. Not in some ways, in all your ways. And what's it say? And he will direct your path. So if we want to put God at the forefront, who would not want him directing the way? You go, I don't need you today. I want to go my own path. I like going different ways. Of course, that's what the Israelites would say. They didn't want God's path. He led them through the wilderness. They said, we don't want that. We want to go our way. We want a king. So we have to be understanding what the will is. Do not be drunk with wine, whereas excess. Be moderate, but be filled with the Spirit. Speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns, which we did today. In fact, I was going to mention something about that last song we sang. It was almost like a Rodgers and Hammerstein, wasn't it? A song in the night, but beautiful words. Talking about the gospel going over the sea and through the air. Talk about a talent and a gift. I don't know where Mr. Graham is today, but a wonderful composer of music and beautiful songs. And that's what we do. We sing. You ever sing during the week? Sometimes I'll find myself plucking out a song during the week or whistling one of our hymns. Singing and making, because it makes you happy. Making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things. So here's things that, once again, it's defined in verses here of what the will of God is. Giving thanks always for all things to Christ. There's another proof. Verse 20, giving thanks for all things to who? God the Father in the name of Christ. So you see, even when we're digging for proofs on who do you pray to, you look at the instruction book and go, well, there's another proof right there of who you pray to. Submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God, this is a learning process within the church too. Submitting to each other. In other words, come on, brethren, work it out. They had troubles back then within congregations too. People with different personalities, yet the same spirit. See, sometimes we're just not used to other people. You've had to get used to me, probably a number 10 or 9 at least on the extrovert scale. Some are introverts out here. You put an introvert with an extrovert, the introvert's not going to have a whole lot to say. It's going to be a lot of work for the extrovert to shut down. I've got funny examples with that. My oldest son is probably, you know, Jonathan, is probably 10 on the extrovert scale. When I see a call from him, I'm going, ooh, here we go. Because he's talking to a number 10, and he's getting more words than I ever will. So, and they're all different personalities. And some will think, well, he just likes to talk. That's his gift. That's what he does. And it's fine. He's not arrogant. But he likes to talk about things in life to other people. And I didn't realize this, but an extrovert is energized by people. I didn't realize that. An introvert is worn out. That's the way that you are. You'll come home from church and you just go, whew. I'll come home from church and go, whoa. Now, I'll be tired, but I'll be, whoa, wasn't that great? And an introvert, you'll think, you know, people have gone to different churches. Well, that's not a very friendly church. No, it's a lot of introverts. That's what it is. You know, but they all have the spirit. Well, how come they're just not coming up? Because that's not what an introvert normally does. It's a lot of work for them to actually come up and say hi. They're kind of going, oh, should I do that? Maybe things, I don't know what's running through the minds of an introvert. You know, just, I don't feel like doing this. It's going to drain me. But different personalities, thank God for them, because this would be one boring world if we were all extroverts or all introverts or all this or all that. Can we not submit to each other? Some of you, you'll go to the feast and you love beaches. And God made those, so they're good. Some of you love mountains. And that's good too. Some are going to go, you know, I've got kids and mountains aren't good for kids, but the beach is. Because you find out you can relax a little bit more at a beach, which is probably true. But then some are mountain lovers. Is one like worse than another? No, they're not. You know, I'll maybe make some comments here and there, having grown up in Michigan. Because see, when you jump in that water, nothing bites you. And I like that part. No jellyfish, no sharks, no just an occasional chemical here and there. Mercury contamination that you get in many places, but the lakes here in London too, I love that part. But you know, the oceans have their own beauty too, don't they? When you can take a ride out in the sea and see the whales. I remember one time my wife and I, she was pregnant at the time, and we went on a catamaran. And I raised that thing up in the wind. I was going, whoa, the baby's going to pop out if I don't get this thing down. But we all of a sudden saw dolphins, and I went kind of chasing after the dolphins. And that's part of God's creation. We went to the Weeki Wachee, if you've gone through that in Tampa, and took that little spring. It's a fresh spring. It's beautiful and it's cold. But it's so refreshing in the hot to Florida sun when you're going down that stream. And there were manatees that we actually kind of swam with. And there were just a couple of huge creatures. They don't bite. And I think they've got whiskers, if I remember right. Very interesting creatures. But all these different things you see, and every time I walk out and I see something, it reminds me of God. As soon as I walk out, I planted some marigolds this year. I'm not very much of a green thumb, but I like those things because they keep coming up. So I trim off the dead ones and more pop up. Every time I go, how's that work? They keep coming. You know, and there's all these different plants and all different bushes and all different foods. Every time I see that, it's evidence of God. Because Satan wants to take our minds off of that. Colossians chapter 1, verse 9. Colossians 1, verse 9. Here we see it once again. Paul inserts this in his letter to the Colossians in chapter 1 and verse 9. He said, "For this cause we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you, and desire that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding." I've got a question after that. Why? Because a lot of times people don't want to pass on for information because that means they'll be as smart as they are. And so knowledge is held sometimes back to make people more powerful or more important. But everything that God does is something that's spread and given to others. In fact, that's what he wants to do with his entire creation and the universe, is share it with everybody else. So that's a good question to ask, why? So it would be great if everyone here could be filled with the will of God and wisdom and all knowledge. And we're all at different levels with different understandings and different things. Verse 10, here it answers it, that you might walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing, being fruitful in every good work and increasing. That's why we got to keep going over the manual. Sometimes we forget some of the things. And sometimes we haven't even read it. And sometimes if we had, for some reason, 30 years later, an understanding of the scripture comes to you that you never saw before. So we're always increasing in the knowledge of God. Strengthened with all might, according to his glorious power, unto all patience and longsuffering, and there's an added word here, with joyfulness. We are supposed to be a happy people, a joyful people. That's a reflection of the Spirit of God. That's one of the fruits of the Spirit. If you're not happy, you got to go back through the manual. That's all I can say. If you're not a happy person, if you're not joyful, it's not anybody else's fault. Because you shouldn't make somebody else control your happiness and your joy, even though there are things that are hurtful sometimes. This is talking about an overwhelming experience about who we are supposed to be. Are those a happy people? I've got a really, really kind note from our YWCO director. It was really encouraging because she just got done with a camp. And she goes, "I can't wait for you guys to come in." You know how encouraging that is? I can't wait for your wonderful group to come in. Because they see we've got a camp, that we've got a program. And I've got a list from 9:30 to 10:45, this is what we do. Then we do this, and we walk together, and we eat together, and we do all these things in order. So I can't believe some of the camps, they just let them go, do whatever they feel like doing. So everybody's all over the place. Where's any instruction for our kids? Where's any teaching? We also, guess what we don't allow at our camps? No radios. You won't see our kids walking around like this, nor our staff. For 3 days, that's gone. No phones. And we have them turn them in. And if they need to call mom, we have them come over and they can call mom or dad. But they don't carry phones with them. We just, can you believe that? We don't have electronics. If something's making a noise, something's wrong. Unless it's birds or bears. We don't have any of we haven't seen those anyway. So, the question is, how many can handle this right now? Long-suffering with joyfulness, strengthened with all might. Let's look at another example of God's will according to the Apostle Paul in 1 Thessalonians. Let's go to another book that he wrote to the Thessalonians, or letter. This is obvious, or should be obvious, to us because in the instruction book, God said, this is how it works, this is how you should make it happen. You know, a man comes together, believe it or not, the time could come where I could get in trouble for hate speech. And it's not hate, it's just reading from the Word of God. He created male and female. They get together. Now, you get in trouble if you address that sometimes now. That this is just the way that God made it to be. But that's That's going amok in our country, isn't it? Because every state now, state by state, is giving over to the marriages between men and men and female and female. And the instruction book, that's obvious for us today. And we know, I can say this very plainly, God hates no one. He loves all people, but he doesn't support the actions. He hates sin. So Paul said in 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 3, "For this is the will of God, even your setting apart," and we certainly are set apart by our general thinking and mentality toward this, "that you should abstain from fornication, that every one of you should know how to possess his vessel, your spouse, your wife, in sanctification and honor. Not in the lust of concupiscence," which is a word for desiring that which is forbidden, "even as the Gentiles practice, who do not know God, that no man go beyond and defraud his brother in any matter, because that the Lord is the avenger of such, and we have forewarned you," we've warned you about this, "don't defraud your brother." So if something happens he does work for you, you pay him. You don't wait. You don't let the wages of him, as it says back in the law of God, you don't let the wages of him sit around. Now, we've got agreements to that within some companies today. You go to a doctor and they'll bill you. That's known. But when the bill comes, that's why the bill's there. Somebody gave you a service, and they're actually doing you a favor by not requiring payment right up front, so they bill you. But we should pay them when we have something done like that. Verse 7 says, "For God has not called us to uncleanness, but to holiness." Remember what Paul said in Romans 12? He said, "Overcome evil with good." Chapter 5 of 1 Thessalonians, chapter 5 of 1 Thessalonians, let's go to verse 11. It says, here Paul said, "Wherefore comfort yourselves together and edify." So much more we need to do this as we see what's going and happening in our world. You know, edifying here, meaning, this is a Greek word, pronunciation is pretty tough here, oikomedo, to be a house builder. To be a house builder. We've talked about that, about building the house together. "Comfort one another and edify each other, even as you also do." So evidently he saw them in the practice of that in Thessalonica. "And we beseech you, brethren, to know them who labor among you and who are over you in the Lord, and admonish you." By the way, there's a lot of people that reject that because of abuses that were done. But this is what God says. This is what the ministry is overseers of a flock. Not to control and dictate, but as shepherds. "Esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake, and be at peace among yourselves. Now we exhort you, brethren, warn those who are unruly." Here we go into the will of the Father in very specific points. "Comfort the feeble-minded, support the weak, be patient toward all, see that none render evil for evil unto any man, but ever follow that which is good, both among yourselves and to all men." Here's another point, verse 16, "Rejoice evermore, pray without ceasing." There's another sermon message. How do you do that? That to me means that all day you're in a constant contact, like God is just walking at your side, talking and having communication, asking him when you come up to certain situations, "God, what is it that you would have me do right now?" I've seen little things that people have asked that I sometimes wish I could be more mindful of that. We think that God is too big for small things. And yet I've heard some people say, "I wish a parking spot would open up for me that I didn't have to walk so far." There it is. You probably heard the story. My father-in-law was praying and hoping that the tree would just fall off. He goes, "I wish just a wind would come," and the wind came and knocked it over. Maybe that's why they had all these trees around their house, because every tree was like a miracle. Storms came through and the tree fell away from the house. That one fell away from the house, fell away from the house. And then 20 feet up, he couldn't get up, and so the wind comes, knocks that one out. So just these small things that as we walk with God, we can ask God to be specifically involved in our life, in the bigger details and in the smaller ones. This is the will of God. This is what he said in verse 18. And everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews 10, verse 35. So this is what we're looking for. Now this points us to the future. So though we've certainly made our share of mistakes as individuals, you know, every morning, isn't it wonderful to have a new morning? You can wake up and start a new day. So it says, cast not away, therefore, your confidence, which has great recompense of reward, even the confidence factor. For you have need of patience, that after you have done the will of God, then you would receive the promise. For yet a little while, and that he is coming will come, and he won't wait. When he says it's time, there is no tarry there. When he says it's time to go, he goes. So there you have it there when it concerns what our future is all about when it's considering the will of the Father. James 4, verse 14. And you've probably seen in some of my letters, I try to incorporate this more. It's not just a saying, but I think about it. Because I could be gone tomorrow or today. Any one of us could. So here it says in verse 14, whereas you know not what will be tomorrow, for what is your life? It's a vapor that appears for a short time and then vanishes away. I saw these young little kids in the pool the other day on our apartment complex, and I said, what happened to that? Mine are gone. They're all out, and I'm blown away, as you would say, from that. I remember these little kids like it was yesterday, putting them on my shoulders, try to get my oldest son on my shoulders, I'd break my back. And they used to jump off. I used to get them up on my shoulders and up on my hands. They would stand up and they would do a Pavarotti. I go, do a Pavarotti. They go, no! That was like yesterday. All these little details. Most of you, obviously all of you, can probably relate to that. How fast time goes. And that's what James says. But he says, you know, for that you ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live or do this and that. But he says, now you rejoice in your boastings. Well, you know what I did. Who cares when it comes to that? What does God will me to do? You know, it's called that Greek word from boastings, eladzonia. It's actually from a Greek word, listen to this word, braggadocio. Isn't that where you get the word brag from? A self-confidence, a boasting, or a pride. He says, all such rejoicing is evil. Therefore, to him that knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. So now we're not just going about thou shalt nots. If you know to do good and you don't do it, it says it's a sin. So there's proactivity here. 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 13. Here's Peter saying, within the will of God, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, because your examples, even though you might not like somebody, you still try to follow that to the best of your ability. We certainly have to submit to the ordinance of taxes, don't we? You know, a lot of people now do not like a certain portion of our government that oversees that. Try being mad and not paying them. And you even saw the example of Jesus Christ. I mean, I'd like to pull some taxes out of a fish's mouth too, but he set the example that you render to Caesar what Caesar's. He says here, verse 14, or to governors as those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of them who do well. Why? Verse 15, for so is the will of God. Why? That with well-doing you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. As free, speaking of free citizens, and not using that freedom and liberty for a cloak of maliciousness, but as the servants of God. Peter said the same thing, and let's look over, go a couple chapters to chapter 4, verse 19. See, I've spoken three sermons now on this, and I could keep going for another one. How important is the will of God in our lives? Scripture after scripture, and reference after reference, and example after example, and specific examples, and subsections of examples, talking about the will of God. 1 Peter 4, verse 19, wherefore them let who suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their souls to him in well-doing as to a faithful creator. So there are those within our congregations that hurt on a daily basis, and this is their instruction. Let those who suffer according to the will of God, not even just physically, sometimes even spiritually, mentally, commit the keeping of their souls to him in well-doing as unto a faithful creator. I always ask the question, it's almost like a little child, why? Why? You can find an answer over in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And most of us know this. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul really gives the answer here in verse 13. He says, there's no temptation or trial that's come upon you, but such is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tested above that which you are able. But he will, with the trial, also make a way to escape that you'll be able to bear it. That's his promise. Let's see something that's going to happen in the future. Revelation chapter 17. Revelation 17. And then we'll conclude it by going back to a certain king that had a lot of wisdom, and he left it. He left the answer to all of his speaking and futility and frustration. He left a really good answer at the end of his book. Here in Revelation 17, we'll see something that's going to happen in the future. Verse 16. Here it says, the 10 horns which you saw upon the beast, these will hate the whore, will make her desolate and naked, and will eat her flesh and burn her with fire. This is something that maybe some of us will be alive to see the outcome of this in the future. Some won't, some will. I don't even know if I'll be here, whatever God's will is. But this is going to be done in the future. For God has put in their hearts to fulfill his will. Isn't that interesting that he'll work with ones that he's called and those that he's not called? In fact, in such specific ways that you can go back to Nebuchadnezzar, who tried to buck it, didn't he? You know, he was given a warning. 12 months later, he's gloating. He's boasting. The braggadocio was there. And God says, really? Eat grass. So what would happen? He worked with him so that his will, that the Father's will would be done in accomplishing what he was going to be doing with the Gentile kingdoms. He's still working with the Gentile kingdoms today, as you probably heard recently, as far as the dealings with Egypt. God's not done with that either. God has put in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God will be fulfilled. And that's why I go back, as I did from the beginning, to show what God said in Isaiah, one of my favorite scriptures back where it says, when I see the rain, and when you've had a lot of it lately, I said, just as the rain comes down, I see the evidence of God in rain, in a cloud, in thunder, in lightning. Fascinating. How did he do that? And he allowed mankind to capture that and to use that power of electricity. Fascinating. It comes from God. So all those things, when you see what God is going to do, and he says, you know, he ends up that Isaiah scripture by saying, it's not, my word's not going to return to me void. Whatever he says, it's going to accomplish. That's why I've learned to walk very carefully with my judgment on what the Word of God means. Because if it goes against the will of God, it's going to come to nothing. And I would rather understand not what my will is, not what I think the outcome is going to be, but to go, you know something, God's got this great mind that's way higher than mine is. I've got some thoughts on what it might be, and it's fine to talk about those from now and then, just because it's interesting subjects. As long as we take it within the realm of where it fits within our lives, that it's not the meat of God's word. We know these things are going to happen, but God says it's going to accomplish that which I please, and it will prosper. So we can either be on the program of fulfilling His will, and you know the way that we do it, don't you? You get up in the morning, and you say, God, what is your will for me today? And then you walk that path and allow Him to direct our path. So let's go finish here over in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 9, a very interesting book within the owner's manual, within our owner's manual, because this is the one to where we know that something specific was asked by Solomon. God gave it to him, and he was so pleased because he didn't ask for the physical things, but he asked for the more important things. God gave him that and blessed him physically. And we know that the life of Solomon was not such a great one. At times it was, as long as he stuck to that path, but we know he veered from the path. Very simple on what he said to do. He said, don't multiply wives to yourselves. He multiplied wives. Don't marry outside the faith. You know, that instruction is still there today. And you talk to a lot of people that decided not to follow that path. But some people will say, well, you know, look at those that have married in the church. Yeah, there's no guarantee that anyone is going to specifically stay with the Word of God. But, you know, if you married them and they were in the faith, you did the best that you can do. That's all that you can do. But he said, don't throw that away and just go, well, nobody in the church is good, so I'm going to look outside the church. Because all the ones I've talked to that have married outside the church aren't really happy. And I couldn't wonder how they could be. Oh, they might have certain happiness, a certain amount. But how could you have that spiritual bond that's the most important thing within a relationship if you're not on the same page with that? So there might be the loneliness aspect might be gone, but he said, you know, don't do that. Marry somebody that thinks like you do. So we try to teach our kids, you know, you're gonna see beautiful, good-looking woman. Ask God to direct your path with that. Because we're not so good at making those choices. Because only God knows the heart. You can do the best that you can to get to know an individual, but God knows the heart. So I would think, here's a good idea when it comes to the will of God, and you're seeking a mate. Ask Him, what's your will? And show me clearly whether this is the person for me or whether it isn't. And she might be the most beautiful thing on the face of this earth to someone's eyes, or he might be, and it might be the worst one for you. You might marry a beautiful, attractive person, and I'm not saying that you want to go marry somebody that's not attractive to you either, but I think God can give us, I know God can give us the entire package that can be there. But you don't want to have somebody that doesn't have a heart after God that just looks good, or that talks good, or that cooks well. Or that, if frankly, they'd say, well, she'd be a good mother. That just wouldn't work out. So we see examples within Solomon's life. Verse 10, or verse 9, we'll start in verse 9 of Ecclesiastes 12, and we'll end here. Moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. He gave good heed, and he sought out, and he set in order many proverbs. Such as, and I wrote one down here. You don't have to turn there, but Proverbs 14, verse 15, it says, the simple believes every word, but the prudent man looks well to his going. Doesn't that apply to today? You hear a lot of things on TV. You hear a lot of things that are being said about this and about that. It says the prudent one looks well to his going. Phil Mickelson advertises this. I'm going, I don't think so. You see the advertisement after that, I go, who in their right mind? Of course, that's the problem. Most people aren't in their right mind. So they'll listen to the commercial and they'll go, well, it's going to fix the problem. Yeah, it'll kill your liver and maybe you. Verse 10, it says, the preacher sought to find out acceptable words, and that which was written was upright, even words of truth. And so they're there within our owner's manual for our benefit today. The words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. And further, by these, my son, be admonished of making many books. There is no end. You get a top seller list. You want O'Reilly's new one? Who else comes out with books all the time? And yet, how many of us have gone through our entire owner's manual before we look to some of these other books that are supposed to be what? telling me something I already know? You're going to tell me your life story of what you know about the Democrats? I know already enough to know about both Democrats, Republicans, liberals, whatever you want to call them. The whole system is failing because people are simply dishonest. You know, there's something very simple. It's called a budget. It's called as simple as a budget. It's just like, okay, you can show your kids, by the way, here's how much you have. That's all that you can spend. Don't spend any more than that. It's that simple. And yet we've got supposedly brilliant people that lead our country. That is just like, do you guys know that we're like $18 trillion in the debt? Where are you getting the money? Well, we're making more. It's like Doritos and the old commercial. Eat all you want, we'll make more. Spend all you want, we'll make more. And yet we see this. Once again, I use that word a lot. I don't know if I could use a better one. It blows my mind to see what we're doing with a budget. Because how would you and I go, oh, you wait on God. You know, it's one of those things that's like you hit your hand with a hammer and it's ouch. You see our budget and you're going, ouch. You know, every time I see that much money being put in every month, I don't know how many billion dollars a month are just injected within our system, and I watch the value of your dollar, every time that happens, it waters it down. And that's what's happening in our economy. And it doesn't take a financial guru to figure out that principle. So what would you do if God put you in charge? I think about that all the time. If God placed me in charge, first of all, I would say, how many voted for this new budget? And some of them would say, we don't have a new budget. So I'd have to fire the president. And then I go, how many have got, then you look at the programs. I would love to sit down with the senators and go, let me see the programs that you have. And by the way, if somebody is on a program that's your buddy or that's your family, you're fired. They'd all be fired. Wouldn't they? So you know they call them pork. It's called good name for it. Pork spending. And so again, these are processes, by the way, that we realize God says, be happy. It's hard sometimes as you're dealing with all these things that we see wrong, but know this. Here's the fact that we can rejoice. We know basic sound principles, and I hope that we're all practicing those. We're practicing what the Word of God says, even within budgets, within our own families, and with what we do. So we work on that to when the kingdom comes, we've already got, that's a no-brainer for us. What's the principle? You don't spend what you don't have. The world tells you otherwise. You can have it now. And that's the message that's sent to our kids. College, they get credit cards for the kids. Oh, good idea. Really spend yourself into oblivion. So when you start your work, you're $200,000 in debt and with increasing interest rates. So that's going to be your work, is paying that off. Once again, these are examples. As the preachers sought acceptable words, so do we in every part and aspect of our life. Verse 13, this is where it concludes, but it really doesn't. So he said something very wise. He goes, out of all these things that I've talked about, let's hear the conclusion of the entire matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. So he sums it up by saying this very important statement, because it's kind of a, this is what it's all got. When you see fear God, I guess it does cover everything else. Because if you're just commandment keepers, that's not enough, is it? If you're just looking at the logistics of commandment keeping, because we just went to James and it says if you know to do good and don't do it, you're probably in violation of the commandment still. But look at what we looked at today and for the past 2 weeks. What are we accomplishing within our life? And this is the most important part as we gather together for God's Sabbath. This is evidence, as we're looking today, this is evidence of God as we look in this room today. Because we would call ourselves Sabbath keepers, but it doesn't stop there, does it? No, that's become, is it a non-issue for us? I think it is, because I don't think anybody here is going to be attending church tomorrow. And I think as we leave today, hopefully, more will be on our mind when it comes to, God, what is it that you want me to do today? And you can get that specific. Now you can go into your subsections. God, I have these needs. I need this. And it already says he knows that you have needs of all those, but you've already sought him first. Read the instruction book so that we can know how to live our lives happily. And ask ourselves every day from this point forward, you will be happier if you're asking yourselves when you get up, God, what is your will for me today?